we'll bring in Craig Forrest, Soccer Central, or our soccer analyst for the Premier League and Sportsnet. Craig, we'll talk about the Premier League in a minute, but as someone who's represented Canada internationally, certainly knows his way around the pitches on this continent, this is really a significant moment for this sport in this region, isn't it? Having the Americans and the so-called golden generation of American talent not advanced to the World Cup, it's like there's going to be an awful lot of soul-searching going on here.
Yeah, there is, for sure. You know, the United States don't have any God-given right to be at every World Cup. I think when they're a mainstay in the World Cup and everybody thinks they're going to get there is because they're a decent side in a poor region. 3.5 spots in CONCACAF should be ample for the U.S. to get in, quite simply. They didn't. Now they're going to have to reboot themselves and figure out maybe what is wrong long-term and why they haven't developed the players at the level that other countries have. Major League Soccer's played a massive role in that. It's also helped some other CONCACAF countries, too, because there's plenty of Central Americans playing in Major League Soccer.
No, so Costa Rica seems to have really benefited from it, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, yeah. So as much as that was built around building the U.S. system, has also made everybody a little bit better. Still, there's no excuse. I think the difference this time, as opposed to going back to the late 80s, first World Cup in between 1950 and 1990, they didn't reach any. So there wasn't much talk or interest or caring about it. It's different this time, massively different. There's a lot more people who care about it and want to see some changes. And you know, north of the border, the U.S. is us, and we've failed to make strides forward in decades, and yet we don't make any changes. We don't have a reboot. We don't seem to fix our own problems, let alone U.S. soccer. So hopefully there's a spillover here, and there's some people that enough people that care and want to make some changes in Canada so we can push for World Cups because, again, poor region should be able to qualify. And if countries like Iceland can challenge, and the size of countries like Wales can challenge, and Northern Ireland and Trinidad and Tobago have been there before, if they can challenge, there's no reason why Canada can't challenge for these World Cups, and we should be doing much better.
You know, one of the things that kind of fascinated me about this story, and I go back to a conversation I had in London with John Herdman, and we were talking about the Canadian system and just how, you know, and this isn't to make an excuse because there are other countries with large landmass, large geographical countries like Brazil, for example, that have had success, and I guess to a certain degree Russia. But I'm wondering if maybe, you know, John's thinking that there's just such a, this country's so spread out that it's so hard to kind of have a centralized approach. I mean, you can do it in Germany because you're a two-hour train ride away from a lot of places, right? You can do it in England. But in Canada, you've got bigger distances. And I wonder if maybe that doesn't work against the U.S. as well, Craig, in that you got a ton of money in the sport. You got a ton of kids playing it. But, I mean, they're playing it in California. They're playing it in Texas. Mm-hmm. They're playing it in New Jersey. They're playing it in Minnesota. You know, there's not that, it's not that easy to get everybody together. I mean, maybe I'm just pulling at straws here. I don't know. But I wonder if there isn't an aspect of that.
No, I agree with you. I believe that there's, you know, every country has its challenges one way or the other. That is one of them for the United States and certainly one of them for us. But other challenges like England have, they might have arguably the best league in the world, but they can't get these youngsters and players that they're developing to get enough playing time at the very top level, because unless you're playing at the very top level, you're never going to be able to make that next step. As much as people think you might be able to challenge, you might be able to get away with one or two games, you're not going to be challenging on a regular basis. So England have their problems there trying to get it in to a league that is massively owned by foreigners. The United States have massive interest in Manchester United, in Liverpool, in Arsenal. This is the United States ownership. They don't care about the English national system, so they got the problems there. Bundesliga, they've got it right from the bottom to the top. The ownership is German. It's structured for the players and the numbers of Germans to play in the Bundesliga teams. There's guidelines that they have to stick by, and they develop, and the top of the pyramid is the national team. It's not rocket science, but you have to have other people involved in it, and right from the top to the bottom have to care and be structured that way. That's not going to be the case in England, so they got their issues there. For us here and in the United States, the best players in the United States, or even the youngsters, maybe not the best players, are the best players that can pay. the better the player you are in the United States and Canada, we find, are the more that the parents have to fork out and pay for these kids.
Yep.
So the underprivileged kids in the United States, millions of them, are not going to get their opportunity to go to IMG Academy or these top academies because they're going to be paying $4,000 or $5,000, $10,000 a season. It's just not happening. So how do they get around that? How do they fund kids that can't afford it, families that can't afford it, that are probably going to be your best players and not run it just strictly as a business?
That's really well said, and I mean, it's a concern. It's a concern for a lot of sports. It's a concern for hockey. It's even a concern for baseball.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, traveling baseball now, you know, you're spending a lot of money getting your kid into the, you know, the right training center, getting him into the right tournaments, getting him seen by the right people. It's becoming more and more of an economic issue. You're absolutely right. I do want to move on to the Premiership. A couple of interesting matches this weekend. Now that the league is back from the break, we'll have Watford and Arsenal, which I find is kind of intriguing because Watford, I've seen them a couple of times, and they're a handful. And it is Arsenal, and I know Arsenal's, you know, Arsenal's got some talent. They're going to have Alexis Sanchez back, but Craig, I can see Watford really pushing Arsenal.
I could, too. Marco Silva, the new coach there, came over from Hull after they're relegated, who nearly saved them miraculously. He's done a really good job there. They start off really strong, and they're sitting in a strong position in the top half of the table of eighth. Play some decent football. They're not going to finish in the top five any stretch, but certainly it's a team that could be really put themselves in the middle of the table with good coaching, good management, and some good scouting as well for Arsenal. We'll see what happens with them. These international breaks are interesting for club football because, especially with the stakes being so high in South America and the Argentinians and the Chileans and the missing out, and in Europe, all these things going on, there's a lot of injuries picked up and a lot of pressure and a lot of physically and mentally taxing situations. So they come back to the club teams. Now the managers at these clubs, like Wenger and Klopp and Mourinho, have to get them focused on the Premier League and can't miss a beat. But that's very, very difficult because there's a certain amount of fatigue, especially the players that are traveling all around the world in the last 5 to 6 days.
Manchester United-Liverpool match will garner an awful lot of attention as well. I'm thinking back, Craig. I think, didn't we have the match last year where Jose Mourinho, I mean, he didn't park the bus. He took the tires off the bus and just kind of left it there and basically said, hey, it's not my home pitch. It's Anfield. I don't care if you're bored. I want some points. Can you see him doing it again, knowing that he's not going to have Fellini? He's certainly not going to have Pogba. But can you see him maybe doing that again in this match?
It'll be interesting. I think with Mourinho this time around, with the power and scoring thrust that he has at Manchester United, at his disposal, you know, the goals are going in thick and fast. Yeah, they've had an easier run of things, but I can see him being responsible in his team, but I don't see him sitting in the back because this is a different side for Man United, and they'll see their opportunity to go to Liverpool and win, and Liverpool have their issues as well. Sadio Mane's out 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. He's one of the most important players. Coutinho and Firmino had to fly back for South America. You talked about Man United. Fellaini's going to be out for a while, but you know, they're looking pretty healthy, all things considered, and have some young players in there, like Sir Rashford, who scored 5 goals and 4 assists in the last 10 games. So I think it'll be an interesting game, but I fancy Manchester United to go for it, certainly more than last year, where they just sat in and really made it, well, it wasn't a spectacle of anything to speak of.
No, and you know, you look at the table, and you know, Manchester United, Man City tied atop with 19 points. Manchester City with that goal differential, they've got a goal differential of 20. Man U of 19. And look, Craig, I've got to think that someplace in the back of Jose Mourinho's head is the idea that this could come down to goal differential at some point, and maybe that, you know, maybe that would weigh against parking the bus and going for it instead.
You know, I don't think he'd be thinking of that at this stage of the season. He'd be thinking of 3 points, and that is it. However, I've been on the wrong end of a situation like that back in the mid-90s with Alex Ferguson when we got thumped 9-0 at Manchester United, and they were chasing goal differential at Blackburn that year. They didn't end up cashing it and lost to Blackburn, but that was an issue for them, so they just started pounding the goals in to try to catch up to Blackburn. So at the end of the season, it's more to worry about, but he's worried about this game and the 90 minutes, picking up 3 points and whatever that takes, and rather than worried about goal differential at this stage.
Great. Good stuff as always. Talk to you again.
Thanks. Appreciate it.